track session number 23812, wheel 4.
Mr. Doyle, reel 4. We were talking about your time at Bertram Newton, RAF Bertram Newton, with the 9th Battalion, which is really a holding battalion of the Royal Norfolk Regiment.
Yes.
Now, you mentioned off tape that you went on some tactical exercises, but they were much the same as a route march, in the sense they were not very serious. Can you talk about them a bit?
Well, when I say they were not really serious, of course they were meant to be serious, but in my opinion, they were not taken in the type of seriousness that one would expect to find in the British forces. We would march out outside the perimeter of the aerodrome. Probably we would go about 2 or 3 miles, and whilst we were on what was known as a scheme, there would be some chaps who were supposed to be attacking the aerodrome as such, and there would be others who were defending it. And so we would separate, some going, the attackers going their way, and others as defenders would be going another way to defend the aerodrome. And so the attackers would arrive and we would meet up, as I say, not too seriously. We'd be on good friendly terms, the attackers and the defence, and it really amounted to nothing. I just think that was something that they did to find something for us to do. I would like to have got away from that side of the army to the type of aircraft that was on this aerodrome. They were, in effect, I think, part of the fleet air arm. And they were the old biplanes, and the wings being made of fabric. I think they were called albacores. I think that was the type of plane that they were. And I can well recall these planes going off, and of course secrecy was of the essence in those days, and it was reputed that they were going out over the North Sea, and I believe that they were after the Scharnhorst at one time, the German battleship called the Scharnhorst. And I can well recall those planes, some of those planes coming back. How they arrived back, I've no idea, because the fabric on their wings were shot to ribbons. How they made it back, I've no idea. But one has to admire those pilots and the air crew of the day. They were wonderful people. And
did you have much contact with the RAF?
Yes, we were allowed.
Or RAS.
Although, as I said, we were housed in Listen huts, and our heating was the old tortoise stove, which used to get red hot, with coke. And
tell me about the Listen huts, because what was life like in the Listen hut?
Well, life in the Listen hut, which we found on the aerodromes, was not too bad. In fact, we even had metal beds to lie on, which was far removed from the old palliasses that we had in the barracks, etc. The comradeship was such, and morale was such, that in our youthful minds, that sort of thing, and having got over the homesickness and that sort of thing, we adapted ourselves to that type of life very well indeed, I would say. And we always felt that in the Air Force, there was quite a comradeship existed. In fact, I met one or two chaps there, especially one chap who was in the Air Force, who was a friend of mine at school. His name was John Bird, and he was of the air crew, and he now lives over at Beckles. He married a Southwold girl. Unfortunately, I divorced, but he does live over at Beckles, and occasionally when I'm over there, I run into him. John Bird, he was a Blythe He lived at Blythburgh most of his life, the village of Blythburgh, but I knew him when I was a boy at school, and that, John Bird. With the Air Force, we were also allowed to go into the quarters where the more social amenities existed. For example, we could go in and play billiards, or in those days we call it ping pong, and generally we were accepted. And in no way were considered, I'm sure, as an inferior force. I must say that the ground force of the RAF lived, by comparison to ourselves, a very, almost an elite life, as I say. But good luck to them. We did not, in any way, did we bear any ill will towards them for that.
Now, were there many German air attacks on the base? You mentioned
one. No, there were not many. At night time, there would be German raids on. We could see. While I was in the gun pit one day, I experienced the flashes and bangs going on at an adjoining airfield, which was called West Rainham, West Rainham. R-A-Y-H-A-M, West Rainham, and that. So I didn't, as I will tell you at a later time, at another aerodrome where I did experience it. But at that particular aerodrome, no, we didn't experience any air attacks.
So what happened next? How long were you there for? You got there about June?
I can't tell you the exact time I was there, but I was there for several months. And if perhaps I could go further on, could
yeah,
I? If, there?
Unless there's anything
else. Well, okay. We then left Bertram Newton, and
the whole battalion, the 9th battalion.
The 9th battalion.
And where did you go there?
And we then went to a small village called Dersingham. Dersingham. And there we were billeted, actually, in civilian houses.
What were the billets like? Tell me about that.
The billets of the day, the house that I got into was a family house. I can't recall their names, but they made us feel at home. We were very welcome at their house, and being billeted there, we then had to obviously go out and do various duties. We were not allowed to do it anyway, stay in the comfort of these places. One of the places that we went was Sandringham, and at Sandringham we did guard work on the Sandringham main gates. This was all, no doubt, to give us something to do while they were still forming the, after Dunkirk, the British forces into units once again. And
what was it like on guard duty on the gates? I mean, well, it
was all right. I must admit perhaps we the chaps. I'm not going to say necessarily myself, but they were country boys, as I say, farmer labourers and country boys from Suffolk, who also did guard work, and they knew a bit about poaching. And there were some, which I suppose were quite valuable, although I suppose they were called golden pheasants. And these chaps would whip into the woods, and somehow they knew how to get hold of these pheasants, which were roasting in the trees. Somehow they got them, and so they were brought back and sold to the local villagers, etc., etc., who secreted them, no doubt, and were very pleased to receive them.
So while the men were on guard duty at Sandringham, they were actually poaching. They were doing that
as well. Yes. So
Did you do any of it?
Oh, no. I'm afraid I wouldn't know how to do it anyway, not at that time.
Anything else about the guard duties on the gates? Was the royal family ever there?
I can't ever recall the royal family being there, not really. They might have been, but I suppose in those days it was never declared where they were. I think we were there not such a long time. And if I can go on further. Right. Well, then it was decided that we would go to another aerodrome. And so we went to what is still today a famous aerodrome in Norfolk called Marham. That's Marham.
Do you know when you got there, or are you still a bit vague?
I'm still vague as to the actual dates, etc., etc., when we were there. But that was all in the sort of months following the Dunkirk and trying to sort us out.
Were you billeted on the base?
No. When we got to Birchmere Newton, we were billeted in the married quarters. They were brick buildings.
Marham, when you got to Marham?
Marham, we were billeted in what were, I suppose, in peacetime married quarters. They were, of course, unoccupied at that time.
But what were those billets like?
Now, those billets were absolutely ideal because one felt quite at home. There was upstairs, downstairs, there was fireplaces of which we were allocated a small ration of coal, which we supplemented because we soon found that the officers had a great store of coal over a very high wall. So we used to shin over the wall at night and unashamedly come back with a bucket of the officers' coal. So we always had a good fire going. This was during the winter months. It was quite a severe winter at that particular time.
This is the winter of 1940.
That's right. A very severe winter. And we needed some form of warmth. We once again done guard work. Now, here were stationed the Rolls-Royce of the day in aircraft, the Wellington Bombers, all of which had a Rolls-Royce Stirling engine. Wonderful sounding planes they were. And there were Polish Air Force there. The Polish, wonderful people, the Poles, wonderful. And we did guard work on there. And
now, what was that the same as at Birchmere Newton?
Very much similar to Birchmere Newton. We still, I might add, still had the old captain and the officers, and we also had a rum ration there.
Were you still just with a Hotchkiss? Or had they got you a
No. We didn't have a Hotchkiss there. We done normal guard work on the roads leading to into the aerodrome, and in the ground across the road, they had a contraption of which had spikes, and there was a lever at the end, and if anything was coming up the road, we had to pull a lever and pull up the spikes, so anything what was coming out would puncture the tyres if they didn't stop when we challenged them, you see. That was one of the things of guard work.
So you were mainly guarding the roads, or were you not doing the perimeter as well?
We done the perimeter. The roads, of course, were part of the perimeter. We also done bomb dumps, guard work. And this, as I said, you asked me a little while ago, it's about the bombing, you see, in which I said there was bombing, we witnessed bombing at West Raynham Aerodrome. Well, we did experience some bombing. I was on the bomb dump, and there was a hut there, of which we, as guards, slept at the main entrance to the bomb dump, which was covered a fairly extensive area with these big high banks, and inside these banks would be stored these various 250,000 to 500,000 pound bombs, and also some aerial torpedoes. Now, whilst I was on that bomb dump, and I was going round with my friend Benny Howlett on our 2 hours on, and I heard an aircraft, and I said to Benny, "Well, Benny, there's an aircraft up there which certainly isn't British. It sounded more like a two-stroke, you know, just a two-stroke engine, and it was circling about." So I said, "Right, let's go back and call out the guard." So we went to the hut where the guard was situated, and outside the guardhouse was a trench. And I shouted to the old sergeant in there, "Call out the guard, call out the guard." And the old sergeant got up and shouted, "Call out the guard." And all the chaps were asleep because we were not allowed to take our clothes off. All with their greatcoats. The only thing they could take off were their boots. And they all came running out. And I said, "There's an aircraft above, enemy aircraft above." I said, "Circling over the drone. Sounds, doesn't look like a two-stroke." So we all got piled into this trench, and suddenly there was a noise, and that was, we found a stick of bombs coming down. Not very big bombs, as it turned out, that came right across in front of where we were, these bombs. And the old sergeant, the last war boy, was so nervous about this aircraft that I heard next to me some scraping, and I realised that the silly old sergeant was going to light up a cigarette, which was the last thing to do on a bomb dump, wasn't it, to give for an aircraft overhead. So one of the chaps sort of knocked all the cigarettes in the doors and called the old sergeant and everything under the sun, which was quite a laugh, really, when I think back. Another little story I'd like to relate whilst on that bomb dump, and I did tell you that there were some aerial torpedoes. Well, in the still of the night, as we went round the various dumps on this this big dump bomb dump, I heard a noise, and it was a noise in the still of the night which sounded like a sizzling noise. And I said to Benny, "There's something going on here." And once again, our imaginations ran riot, and we thought, somebody's put a bomb in here to blow the place up. So we crept nearer and nearer, and as we got nearer, it got louder and louder. So it was quite pronounced. So as we got to where the torpedoes were situated, I said to Benny, "Go back to the guardhouse, report to the guardhouse that there's something funny going on in the torpedo place." So Benny goes back, report to the old sergeant, who immediately contact the Air Force personnel, who within about 5 or 10 minutes come roaring down in their vehicle into the where we had hearing this noise. They stopped, and they listened, and they gradually crept into where the torpedoes was. And evidently, what happens with torpedoes, of which I'm completely ignorant of, they're full of compressed air. And so there was a leak in one of the torpedoes, and that was the compressed air escape. And it was quite a thing, because one didn't know exactly what was happening, but that was one of the things I can really recall, you know, which I suppose is incidental, really, but nevertheless it stays in one's mind. So that was my time doing guard work at Marham Aerodrome. As I have also stated, it was a very, very severe winter. The snow on the aerodrome itself got deeper and deeper, so that the aircraft, it was absolutely impossible for them to take off. And so one of the things we had to do was manual, really, in as much as trying to clear away the snow with shovels, etc., etc., which I think the snow defeated us in the end because of the amount that was, became an almost impossibility.
That must have been hard work.
It was jolly hard work, yeah, but all personnel was out, including RAF personnel and our forces. So, as far as Marham is concerned, I can't recall there ever being anything extraordinary happening other than that. I'll say this, that in those days, various sporting things in the world, rugby was one of them, as well as football, and there was a very famous man who's Polish. He was called Prince. He was a prince. Prince Obolensky.
And who is he?
Prince Obolensky. And don't ask me how to spell it, because I wouldn't really know. But he was a pilot of one of the Stirling bombers. And Prince Obolensky was well known all over England, and that as a brilliant rugby player. And I knew very little about rugby myself, but he was famed for that. And his plane, a Stirling bomber, came in and crashed just on the perimeter of the of Marham Aerodrome, and that's where he finished his life was killed. Prince Obolensky, which in the history of rugby, I'm sure he would have been well known even probably today by rugby players.
Now, do you regret the fact that you were now an infantryman, because you'd done well at signal and it had been taken away from you? Did you regret?
I always regretted that I was in the army and not the navy. Yes, and
I mean the signalling.
Oh, the signalling. Oh, sorry. As far as signalling is concerned, I did regret that. Although I must say that because we were having a relatively easy time, I don't suppose that worried me unduly. The life in those days was, by comparison with normal army procedure, was relatively easy and known as cushy, I suppose, cushy.
So how long were you at Marham then?
You got
that was a winter of
40-41. Yeah, that's right. I can't recall how long we were there, but obviously they had to eventually sort us out. So perhaps I could move from Marham, yeah, could I? Yes. Well, right. So we were then designated to what was to become my battalion. My battalion was the 6th Battalion of the Royal Norfolk Regiment. My friend Benny Howlett then left me, Benny, and he went to the 4th Battalion. I'm not really sure where Benny went. I think it was on the Norfolk coast somewhere, but I can only say where I went.
Now,
I was then.
How was the 6th Battalion formed? Was it formed from the 9th Battalion, or what?
No. The 6th Battalion was a regular battalion, and it was stationed at Northwich in Cheshire.
And so you were posted from the holding battalion.
So I was posted from the holding battalion, the 9th Battalion, to the 6th Battalion of the Norfolk Regiment in Northwich, Cheshire.
Now, whereabouts would that have been, roughly, which month?
Whereabouts in Northwich? I suppose that must have been During that winter, I would have thought, yes.
After Christmas or before?
That was... I couldn't say. My memory is a bit dim at that particular time. But, so...
What was your first impression when you joined the 6th Battalion? My first impression
was pretty terrible.
Why was that?
Because we found ourselves in... from an easy life in the old 9th Battalion to strict discipline. And we were issued with all sorts of things, including ammunition. I found that I was on a charge with another chap from the old, a person named Jackson from Lowestoft. We were put on a charge because we went on one of these big schemes. They had been issued with live ammunition, and I'd loaded my rifle with live ammunition, and so had he, whereas of course we shouldn't have loaded the rifles at all. And when we were out on the scheme, and it was found on examination of the rifles, the Lee Enfield, that we had got live ammunition, we were immediately up on charge. And so we had to go in front of the commanding officer of the day, and we were reprimanded because of carrying live ammunition, which I had to explain that in the old Holden Battalion we hadn't got any live ammunition, and we thought that was what ammunition was for, was to put into a rifle, which he thought rather insubordinate and, in subordination, and I was then confined to the camp for I think about 7 days and put on to fatigue work and that sort of thing. So I soon found that life became very hard. We done a lot of training.
What kind of training were you doing?
We done weapon training. Then the Bren gun came into existence. We done Bren gun training. Rifle training, target practice, manoeuvres, all sorts of manoeuvres. We even went as far as up into Kendal, up in Cumberland, and